Hey everybody, in keeping with tradition, that was Have Gun Will Travel with Resist the Machine. Welcome to Shop Talk. Can you believe 2026 is almost half gone? Time seems to go so slowly, at such a rapid pace, but we're still here, if barely hanging on by our fingertips. Is it the genocides and bubbles? Or the heat and humidity. Whichever, here in the tropics we will be under God's broiler for another 4 or 5 months. And though I am eternally grateful for our alleged winters, I'm already longing for summer's end. Hopefully we will have another hurricane-free season, but Netanyahu's insistence that America needs another 911 makes me uneasy. I'm inclined to believe another 911 wouldn't get most of us to trust Daddy's narrative again, though I can't help but wonder which narrative they'll be pushing with the next false flag. It's abundantly clear none of our representatives are actually our representatives. It's equally clear they are in it for themselves. They don't care about us at all, and they're corrupt AF. But since most of my traffic has suddenly begun coming from the land that decency forgot, I won't get into specifics, except to say we lost Massey due to their influence. By the way, does anyone believe he lost fair and square? Here's hoping he spends the remainder of his term bringing the ruckus. He could do a lot of damage for our benefit, but he can't stop a psyop. He would probably name and shame it, but he can't stop it. And a big one is coming. I can feel it in my bones. Whatever they pull, it'll be designed to get rid of as many of us as possible, and to get the stragglers on board for more crimes against humanity. Will it be explosive and blamed on Iran? Will it be contagious and require a vaccine? Could it be financial, with bubbles bursting and another upward transfer of wealth? Digital currency the only solution? Maybe an emergency fuel shortage requiring another lockdown, and the crowds go wild, which gives them an excuse to release their standing army and fill the camps. They are now in the process of spending almost $40 billion on the construction of new detention centers. Anyone who believes they're for immigrants has not been paying attention. And just because they're desperate, though they've started the ball rolling, I don't think they plan to wait for famine to take us out. But that will be helpful down the road a piece, because we, the people, are getting pretty desperate too. Absolutely nothing is going well for us useless eaters, but we still gotta eat. So I hope the rich are as tasty as they are diabolical.
Welcome to Informed Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW and streaming to CHDTV, Rumble, YouTube, and Facebook. Thank you, listeners, for joining us today. I'm your host, Lisa Templeton. Today, we have a special treat for you. Please welcome San Francisco Bay Area architect Richard Gage, AIA, member of the American Institute of Architects, and founder and former CEO of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He now leads the charge for a new World Trade Center investigation, along with his courageous wife, Gail, at richardgage911.org. Mr. Gage became interested in researching the destruction of the World Trade Center high-rises after hearing the startling conclusions of a reluctant 9/11 researcher, David Ray Griffin, on the radio in 2006, which launched his own unyielding quest for the truth about 9/11. The organization he founded, AE 9/11 Truth, now numbers more than 3,600 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation into the explosive destruction of all three World Trade Center high-rise buildings on 9/11. And I was lucky enough to meet this gentleman at America Fest in 2023. And I would like to introduce with honor Richard Gage. Welcome, Richard.
Hello, Lisa. Hi, everybody. Great to be here.
Really happy to have you here. Most of our listeners, I would imagine, are aware of the treasonous nature of the COVID operation, but some of them may not have yet put the pieces together as to the explosive evidence of a similar controlled narrative regarding those three towers that were destroyed on 9/11. And I should let the audience know that it may take courage to hear and be open-minded to what Richard has to share with us today. Richard, you've spent years studying what happens when a major public event is packaged into a fixed narrative and then used to shape public perception and policy. Today, you're going to help us look at those parallels more clearly between 9/11 and COVID and what they may reveal about how large-scale narratives are built, defended, and used. So could we start here? You've said that 9/11 helped establish a template. In what ways do you see COVID following that same playbook?
This is the subject of today's talk because 9/11 is actually a component in a long series of operations called false flag operations, which are designed to deceive populations into supporting wars that would otherwise be unpopular. So we've all been manipulated, for instance, with 9/11, as we'll see, to start a war in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I was shocked to learn when 2020 came along with a pandemic that we have equally highly charged set of narratives designed to manipulate us into certain behaviors, which we'll talk about. And the playbook was laid out with 9/11, followed again with COVID. Kevin Ryan did some incredible research tying these two together, and my work is based on his original research.
Kevin Ryan?
Yeah, Kevin Ryan. Okay. He's a 9/11 researcher.
Well, you have brought a wealth of information. So, Richard, would you like to take it away?
Yeah, and indeed, it does take courage. As you've mentioned, this information is, if you're not familiar with it already, inevitably, at some point, when you became familiar with it, you found it equally dark and disturbing as the truth about COVID was. So we're looking at the astounding parallels between these two false flag operations, because they changed society radically and the world, politically, culturally, economically, geopolitically. So we've got to connect the dots so we don't walk ourselves blindly into the next false flag operation, which they've been toying with Gaza and now Iran, which are not the subject of today's presentations. But boy, do we have a lot to learn there too. So the question is, are these intended outcomes, or did they just happen and correlate with each other by coincidence? To find out, we look at the features of false flag operations. They happen in advance, so people know about them. There's drills, insider trading, predictive programming, all foreknowledge of the events because they're planned. We have an elusive, powerful enemy. They've created a climate of fear regarding these enemies. There's propaganda campaigns put out by the government and media. There's the abuse of science and a response that's far more harmful than the original problem. Because all of this is problem, reaction, solution. They engineer the problem. They manipulate the public, their reaction, to move them into a set of behaviors and support systems that achieve their ultimate objectives. There's no real investigation into these things. There's false official accounts. Media censorship is questioning of the official narrative allowed. A shifting narrative that responds to the public waking up about one part of it. Serious conflicts of interest with suspicious benefits for insiders, the implementation of draconian policies and surveillance. These are all symptoms, features of a false flag operation. Well, let's begin with parallel number one. There's foreknowledge because the events are planned. People know about it in advance. With regard to 9/11, we have NORAD practicing 28 hijacking exercises within 2 years of 9/11, some of them even occurring on 9/11. Foreign hijackers, airliner crashing into famous U.S. buildings. Yes, these things were thought about and practiced, as this was not a surprise. Terrorists loading a Learjet with explosives, attacking Washington, D.C., hijacked aircraft hitting many targets, including the World Trade Center and the Federal Express plane. Terrorists hijacked it, ran it into the World Trade Center and the U.N. headquarters in New York. So again and again and again, we see the same patterns. They practice hard for these things, and they don't mind that they get out into the public sphere, as we'll talk about in the predictive programming section of these false flag operations. Even on 9/11, we have these exercises.
And interesting that on 9/11, some of these drills were underway, creating confusion between the drill people and then the first responders who were called for help. And also, I recall officials after 9/11 saying, we never could have predicted that somebody would have tried to take down these towers with airplanes.
Who could have predicted it? They practiced it up to and including on 9/11. It's incredible. Diverting our jet fighters sent out to the Atlantic Ocean up to Alaska away from the vulnerable East Corridor, leaving it relatively defenseless, such that they couldn't respond or wouldn't. Normally, they're capable of responding to hijacked airliners within 5 minutes.
Was that part of a drill, having sent those away, or was that supposedly a response?
All these are drills, and yes, that was part of several of these drills. It's absolutely incredible. And the drills continued through the time that we knew that real hijackings came. Like you suggested, the purpose was to confuse the radar techs at NORAD. Is this real world or is this exercise? Yeah. One of them's asking. Finally, they convinced NORAD to stop the drills, but not until the last jet had approached the Pentagon. So they achieved their objective of confusion. In fact, one of these drills has Osama bin Laden on the cover, June of 2001.
On the cover of what?
The drill, counterterrorism, June 2001.
The manual given to the participants in the drill?
Yeah, that's right. And one of them has the North Tower in the sights of an airplane designed to hit it. We also have other drills, which are very interesting. Tripod 2, a biochemical attack drill with hundreds of FEMA, New York Police Department, New York Fire Department, FBI, military personnel in nearby New York's Pier 92. On September 11th, 2001, scheduled to start when? The next day, September 12th. Hmm. So all of these individuals were in place and ready to go and took over the management of this emergency on the next day. Coincidence? Let's listen to Dan Rather.
Rescue worker with the National Urban Search and Rescue. It's part of FEMA, the Federal Disaster Relief Agency. So Tom Kenny from the Urban Search and Rescue team.
To be honest with you, we arrived late Monday night and went into action on Tuesday morning.
Thank you for being honest, Tom. On board Monday and ready to go into action Tuesday the next day. Absolutely incredible. Well, same thing at COVID. On that side of the equation, we have Event 201, a tabletop exercise anticipating a coronavirus nearly identical to the outbreak that occurs 3 months later. So, John Hopkins and the World Economic Forum and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all the usual suspects sponsoring this tabletop exercise, which even anticipated resistance to their measures, their propaganda, and eventual engineered vaccines.
And people can still go watch that Event 201 on YouTube. They kind of brag, look at all the good we rulers are doing for you people planning.
We would have been much worse if we didn't plan for this. Of course, everything they planned for just about came true. We have Fauci with foreknowledge of the event. Get this.
There will be a surprise outbreak, pandemic preparedness. And if there's one message that I want to leave with you today, there is no question that there will be a challenge the coming administration in the arena of infectious diseases.
And there was.
So he said that in 2017.
Yeah. And sure enough, Trump had to deal with that when he came in. The World Health Organization calls for U.S. and other countries to sign up to a pandemic treaty. Warning, disease X outbreak could kill 20 times more people than COVID. So they have foreknowledge. They tell us about these things. They tell us about the treaty, which this is very early on. And of course, the treaty is designed to permeate through the constitutions and national sovereignty laws of most countries. We have insider trading that occurs. That's foreknowledge by any definition. What are we talking about? In the days before 9/11, the Chicago Exchange Board recorded major spikes in put option purchases for United and American Airlines, betting that the next day they would go down in value. These were off the charts. This is not a coincidence. This is obviously insider trading, to the point that the 9/11 Commission report had to include information about it because it was getting so obvious. But they said it couldn't be tied to Al-Qaeda. So they determined that it's not insider trading. Well, who was it tied to is the question, of course. It was tied to the Deutsche Bank, to Swiss Re, Deutsche Bank run by Allen and John Dulles, who were former CIA leaders. And we have insider trading on COVID too. Did you know that four senators Burr, Loeffler, Inhofe, and Feinstein were investigated for insider trading. They're on the Intelligence Committee, and they received briefings by the CIA, and they apparently traded on information received in those classified briefings. We have conflicts of interest with Bill and Melinda Gates, the CDC, World Health Organization, and even Trump's Warp Speed vaccine czar, who had to give up his role in his drug company, but he wouldn't, in order to assume his role in the government as the vaccine czar, if you will.
Who was that, Richard?
This is Moncef Slaoui.
Okay.
So he said, no, I'm not giving up my role in my company. And he made a lot of money. So instead of making him employee of the government, they treated him like a subcontractor, a contractor, a vendor. So he could have his cake and eat it too. We have another parallel. Number two, false official accounts that are developed to support a false narrative. The myth, for instance, that there's 19 fundamentalist hijackers who took over these planes, ran them into their targets, or were alleged to have. Planes and jet fuel caused the Twin Towers to collapse. We've disposed of that narrative in all of our presentations. And the myth that fire caused the collapse of the third skyscraper that came down on 9/11. And we'll show that that's not the case. And that Pentagon was penetrated by who? Hani Hanjer. He failed Cessna flying school, and yet he's credited with flying this plane descending 8,000 feet per minute in a 270-degree corkscrew maneuver more associated with a fighter jet. And by the way, where does that jet hit? Does it hit the vulnerable roof structure, a much easier target, say over Donald Rumsfeld's office? No. It hits the area supporting the Department of Army auditors who are auditing the $2.3 trillion that was missing from unaccountable for in the Pentagon budget.
That Rumsfeld had, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that he had just talked about the night before. Mm-hmm. So incredible. Side note there. We have false official accounts with COVID too, don't we, Lisa? Like the virus migrated from bats to humans. Yeah, that's what it was. And this could happen again and again, right? Pick your animal, chickens, bovine. Yeah. We all know and understand that this did not happen this way. Thus, another shifting narrative that we talked about. This was exposed early on by the gentleman that they handpicked to lead the Lancet COVID-19 Commission in the role of finding out where this virus actually came from. Here's his comment.
I chaired a commission for the Lancet for 2 years on COVID. I'm pretty convinced it came out of U.S. lab biotechnology, not out of nature. Just to mention, after 2 years of intensive work on this, so it's a blunder, in my view, of biotech, not an accident of a natural spillover.
And most people, as they use this as a shifting narrative, this blunder, because they just couldn't sweep it under the rug anymore, they can avoid the intentional engineering of not only COVID, but the vaccine, which has come out also. And so they just went on to the next disaster and just swept that one under the rug because they couldn't clean it up anymore.
I'd also like to point people to the work of Sasha Latapova on Substack. She has Due Diligence and Art. Are you familiar with her, Richard?
Oh, yeah. I love her stuff.
Okay, me too. She's not convinced that gain of function is actually a process, a thing. So interesting. Maybe the gain of function is false too. But in any event, these narratives are shifting and limited hangouts are taking place.
Yeah. And in terms of this one, they tried to hide this limited hangout so that when it did come out, it would look like, oh, the truth is finally getting out there. The truth is also supported by Sasha Latapova that the military was deeply involved from the inception of this disease, which is years before it actually came out. But regarding the gain of function experiments, there's 100,000 documents that the defender reveals that prove that this was, if not a limited hangout, that was involved, if not being a limited hangout, even though it might be a limited hangout. Even Fauci's National Institute of Health admits that the U.S. funded gain of function in Wuhan while he was still denying it. Mm-hmm. So we have other false official accounts relative to COVID. 1 million Americans have died. Oh, yeah? We'll look at that. Wearing masks will save lives. Lockdowns to flatten the curve and save lives. 2 weeks only. Mm-hmm. Vaccines provide better immunity than natural immunity. This one won't be controlled by herd immunity. And vaccines are safe and effective. We'll look at that too. But the parallel number three tells us we have an elusive, powerful enemy here. With 9/11, on that side of the equation, we have hidden terrorists throughout the U.S. that could do massive damage with weapons of mass destruction at any time, even in your neighborhood.
Invisible boogeyman.
Yep. Osama bin Laden, who probably died a year after 9/11, but has been kept at large, hidden in a cave, eluding the most sophisticated military intelligence in the world. Deadly, lethal anthrax hidden in letter attacks that killed members of Congress, attacked members of Congress and killed a number of people. Every American should be afraid because you could open a letter and find white powder there and it could even kill you. So this fear is incredible. Well, they use this on the COVID side too, of course. The virus itself, it can't be seen. It's smaller. Any person or surface that you can touch, like an ATM machine, you know, always get that powerful hand wash stuff. What do they call it?
Sanitizer. We call it hand sanitizer.
Sanitizer, yeah. Well, that turns out to be poison for you too, by the way.
Yeah.
But the virus itself can multiply inside of you. I was afraid to even touch ATM machines. I remember feeling the fear before I kind of woke up to this programming.
When did it dawn on you that COVID was another one of these false flags?
About 6 months, I think, after they started talking about it.
Okay.
I'm going, wait a minute, there's too many parallels here. And we're looking at them, right?
Yeah. Also, people were made to not only to worry about their own death, but about the tremendous burden they would have if they thought they killed someone else, like a child or an elderly person or someone else in their community. And this really played on people's goodness and compassion for others.
Yes, absolutely. The only way to protect yourself from this enemy is to stay at home, right? Hide behind a mask and hope it doesn't get you. It's that mythical, magical, and trust the vaccine when it came out, because your immune system won't help you with this one.
And to open up, get shot up.
And that leads us to the next parallel, number four. They create a climate of fear. So we're divided. We're afraid. We're arguing with each other in communities, especially those who've bought into the official narrative and singling out and attacking those who didn't. We have fear-based propaganda with 9/11. For instance, Muslim terrorists could be anywhere. And so
sleeper cells.
Sleeper cells in the U.S. ready to come out and get us. And remember the terror meter. How afraid do we want people to be? Well, we just raise that meter toward the red. And I remember seeing this on TV and raising it. All based on what? Chatter on the internet. That's heard by who? Not you or me, but intelligence agencies who are the dispenser of the truth. Thus, how afraid we should be. They could strike anywhere at any time. And it turns out that most of these terror cell incidents were instigated by the FBI, who put up these mentally ill people to do these different types of terrorist bombings or whatever. And they are provoked by the FBI. Most of them, their trials were thrown out as a result of a lot of this framing.
Related to 9/11, Richard, or are those other incidents?
Well, only loosely, in that they happened after 9/11.
Okay. Could you name one? This part I'm not really familiar
with. Oh, there are several Muslim terrorist cells in Florida. I don't remember the specific one, but these are events that we're so glad the FBI was on top of this one, because this could have been a real one. Well, in 1993, which was before 9/11, of course, it turns out that the terror cell from this Egyptian Muslim extremist, the Blind Sheikh, was provided with a bomb. The FBI informant actually recorded the FBI, and these documents came out in court that the FBI provided a live bomb. And he goes, well, I'm going to record all this. I'm not good with this. That came out in court. And that's the bomb that went off in the World Trade Center and killed people
in
1993. So we have the same thing, of course, with COVID. And alarmist predictions of mass death, the media, propaganda, with overcrowded hospitals. They engineered staged events with lines in New Jersey, for instance. The hospital's empty, but outside they have these big lines that paid actors are simulating a overflow crisis. The COVID cases and death numbers are grossly exaggerated exponentially to create fear and to get people to take the PCR test, which we'll talk about. Asymptomatic people can become super spreaders. Yeah, again, you could kill grandma if you go see her, so don't have her over for Thanksgiving. And they call this a pandemic of the unvaccinated, Biden in particular. So then we have parallel number five, propaganda campaign that's set up and run by the government and the media, who's always in collusion along with the government in these events. They're supposed to be the check on the government, but again and again, any checks are token at best and in compliance with the official narrative most often. But on 9/11, we had them leading the march to war in Afghanistan and in Iraq with propaganda such as by a major PR firm, Hill and Knowlton, to manufacture false stories like babies being thrown out of incubators by the Iraqi army when they invaded Kuwait. And this story came from Neria al-Sabah, who was not a nurse in a Kuwaiti hospital, but the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador. The entire story is shown even on Wikipedia to be entirely untrue. It never happened.
She testified before Congress with these falsehoods. Is that correct?
And that is a primary emotional manipulation that was a primary motivator for us supporting the war into Iraq, which they had a hard time garnering support for because people could see behind the weapons of mass destruction allegation because they never showed up, right? And the allegation of ties between Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, which they're enemies. They're on opposite sides of the Muslim world. So we have propaganda and the COVID side too. The World Health Organization hires who for their propaganda? Hill and Knowlton, the same PR firm that generated this hoax upon the American people. It's incredible. And the World Health Organization hires this top PR firm to fight COVID smears in the U.S. as well. So we have the CDC, the World Health Organization, NIAID, Pfizer, Gates, Fauci, controlling the propaganda. How do they do that? Well, in the case of Gates, he grants the international media $319 million. Now, what do they do in return for that? Mm-hmm. They provide the propaganda that he asks them to provide. And they do a good job of it because most of America and the world is taken in by it. Well, the advertising on TV, most of it, 70% of it is Big Pharma controlling what got put out on the news. You want to lose those dollars? They don't want to lose those dollars. Mm-hmm. So we also have propaganda from high tech, Neil Ferguson's computer modeling, catastrophic projections that we could have massive deaths if we don't modify the behavior of the world's people, all countries. Estimating up to 500,000 deaths if the government took no action. Prime Minister Boris Johnson almost immediately, based on this report, announced stringent new restrictions on people's movements, in other words, lockdowns. Most countries followed the advice, particularly after the UK and the US explicitly invoked the report as a justification for lockdowns. This is the primary model used for that.
Beware of models.
Yeah, garbage in, garbage out, right, Lisa? There were extreme disparities, though, between the projections and reality. And this kind of came out, but it was too late. Mm-hmm. All of the 6-foot circles on the grocery store floor were in place. People were trying to eat with masks on their face. People driving down the road in their own cars with masks. People at the beach with masks and when no one else is around. And then they even closed down the whole beach. A whole big psy-op, psychological operation. This requires the abuse of science, so we have to manipulate people. So in the case of 9/11, we have NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was tasked by Congress to explain the collapses to the American people. They ignore overwhelming evidence and irrefutable evidence of explosives and demolition, the seismic evidence of explosions before the collapse of all three towers. Well, wait a minute. We're told that any sounds of explosions and seismic events were because of the collapse. No, they occurred before the collapses. And this is proven again and again in our longer presentations on these subjects. They ignored temperatures, extreme temperatures of molten iron, unaccountable for in the official narrative. Fires only get to be about 500-600 degrees typically, sometimes 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. But we're talking about temperatures exceeding 3,000 and 4,000 degrees. We're talking about billions of previously molten iron microspheres in all the World Trade Center dust, found not by conspiracy theorists, but by the U.S. Geological Survey and R.J. Lea, environmental consulting firm, doing studies on the dust. They don't know where these came from, but they indicate temperatures, again, exceeding 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit, which are indicators of what really brought these towers down. But this is the third tower. you can see what brought it down. You have a frame of reference for this destruction. You've seen it before. The entire building drops uniformly, suddenly, symmetrically, straight down into its own footprint in under 7 seconds. That's at free fall acceleration. That's as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky, gaining additional speed every second, the definition of acceleration. Well, what can do that? And that means that not one of the columns, 80 of them in this building, gave any resistance during that time. What can do that? Fires, which you don't even see, but there were a few small scattered fires in the building. They can't take out all those columns in a fraction of a second of each other. So we know what can do this. This is controlled demolition. We've all seen it before, like in the old hotels in Las Vegas. So we know that this building came down by controlled demolition, though NIST tried to sell us on the narrative that it came down by fire. So again, the abuse of science is incredible. The false narratives. They did the same thing at the Twin Towers, told us, oh, this came down by jet plane impacts and weakening of structural steel by the fires. Well, just look at it. We have upward, outward, arching streamers, a geometry of fireworks, freely flying structural steel sections ejected laterally at 80 miles an hour, clocked by physicists, landing up to 600 feet in every direction, trailed by thick white smoke clouds. Why are thick white smoke clouds trailing every one of these steel framing sections? Steel is not flammable in office fire conditions. Well, thermite, an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter, issues two byproducts. One is molten iron, which we've talked about. The other is aluminum oxide ash, the other byproduct of thermite. So that's why they're trailing thick white smoke clouds. There's no other explanation for it. So yes, we go into the behavior of these buildings in quite some detail in our presentations available at our website, richardgage911.org. I encourage everybody to tap into that. But as you can imagine, and as you know, we have abusive science in COVID too. They've ignored the established science of natural immunity of the body, human body designed by God to get us through pandemics. The 2-year safety efficacy studies weren't even completed, though they were promised by Pfizer. They had 20,000 placebo recipients, meaning they didn't get a vaccine, they got saline solution. And they compared those to the 20,000 who did get the vaccine. But guess what? Mm-hmm. When people started dying, which they said was as a result of COVID, they felt sorry for the 20,000 people who didn't get the vaccine. So they vaccinated all of them, destroying the control group.
Yeah.
This is not science, by the way. This is some bastardization of science. And this is well known, documented, and you can learn all about it. But they also manipulate the disease statistics and the death certificates. In fact, what is a COVID death? They redefined a COVID death as the following.
I just want to be clear in terms of the definition of people dying of COVID. So the case definition is very simplistic. It means at the time of death, it was a COVID positive diagnosis. So that means that if you were in hospice and had already been given, you know, a few weeks to live, and then you also were found to have COVID, that would be counted as a COVID death. It means that if technically, even if you died of a clear alternate cause, but you had COVID at the same time, it's still listed as a COVID death. So everyone who's listed as a COVID death doesn't mean that that was the cause of the death, but they had COVID at the time of death. I hope that's helpful.
This is how they exaggerated on order of magnitude the number of deaths, because if you can get these numbers greatly increased, you put more fear into people and you convince more people to take your pre-engineered solution to this engineered problem.
And that was a press conference in the state of Illinois. And do you remember who's speaking at what we just heard?
Yes. Oh, the name?
If you do, that's fine.
Health Department Director, State of Illinois, 2021.
I'm surprised she would even admit that.
It's incredibly honest. That's why it's so good for us to use.
We know that Senator Jensen in Minnesota, I think, came out early, like April 2021, and described how the CDC had instructed physicians to to alter the way the death certificate is filled out, again, contributing to this false escalation of the so-called COVID deaths.
Absolutely. And one of the other things they do is get this rate of false positives high. So the deaths is one thing, but if you can manipulate people with the fear of death, you can get them to get an early diagnosis and take the PCR test. Well, the mass testing of people, overwhelmingly asymptomatic, the cases continue to mount with these false positives. In fact, the Nobel Prize winner, Carrie Mullis, who invented the PCR test, says it is not to be used for diagnostic purposes. What? That's what we're doing here. He says its results are meaningless when used this way. With PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. And this indeed is how they were able to get a banana, a kiwi fruit, etc., to test positive for COVID. It's incredible. The manipulation of the statistics. In 2021, the flu detections were absent. Well, wait a minute. Where did the flu go in 2021 and 2022 even? So very low. Well, you take those statistics and you apply them to COVID and you get those statistics up. So it's just so obvious when you begin to look at it.
They forced so many people to test. I remember it was so heartbreaking. I live in King County, Washington, and there was a time to go to a restaurant. Either you had to show your papers of COVID vax or a negative test. My kids who were in school had to show a negative test to go to their friend's birthday party at a bouncy house place, or to go to this theater event, that was a field trip, and I never got a test, but it put me in a really bad position. I didn't want my kids to get it, but they wanted to attend these things. It was horrible, horrible. And this is how they, created this case-demic, is forcing people to get tests besides the people who had fallen prey to the fear of, oh, I better go get a test if I have the sniffles.
It's been shown by some that the tests themselves included diabolical ingredients.
Yeah,
some of which were even designed to cause COVID. I don't have that backup here, but there were cheap alternative medications that could treat and cure COVID. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, for instance. But they were badly attacked, as you might recall, Wall Street Journal in particular. Ivermectin didn't reduce hospitalizations. Well, they're citing a flawed, unpublished study concluding this, taking a key systematic review showing how ivermectin could have saved millions of lives. What did you say, Lisa?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, horse paste, y'all. Stop it.
Horse paste. Yeah. Well, as demonstrated in nearly every subgroup in this study, the ivermectin recipients fared much better than those who received the placebo. So this is a well-done study that shows both hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin with much better results than the alternative Paxlovid and Molnupiravir. So The Lancet had to retract their own paper, which caused the halting of the hydroxychloroquine trials. It could be because they had manipulated the data and got caught. Mm-hmm. So parallel number seven, we have no real investigation. The 9/11 commission, their own commissioners said they were set up to fail, mostly lawyers and politicians, no engineers, not to be considered the last word on the attacks, but only a beginning that qualified. Yeah, the inside story of the 9/11 commission. Tim Romer says, we were extremely frustrated with the false statements we were getting. Max Cleland resigned. This investigation is now compromised. America's being cheated. The White House wants to cover it up. So not only were there no investigations, the commission, which they were forced into having by the family members of the victims, and they delayed that for a year, the White House did. Finally, they had to have it. And the counsel for the commissioners themselves says, I was shocked at how different the truth was from the way it was described. The tapes told a radically different story from what had been told to us in the public. There was an agreement not to tell the truth. Well, this is what happened with COVID too. No investigation of the 40% increase in all-cause mortality following the vaccinations. No investigation of the gain of function research. No investigation of the vaccine contents, which we'll get into in part two of this series.
Richard.
So we're going to jump next time when we come back to parallel number 8, a response far more harmful than the original problem. This is where it gets really juicy, Lisa.
So that's going to be next week. And we have about another minute so I hope you guys are holding on tight and really taking all this in. There's so much. If this is new to you, I would highly encourage you to go to richardgage911.org. He's got a wealth of information there, videos, webinars, white papers, a community hub where you can find other advocates, cards and brochures, podcasts. Hey, maybe ours will be posted there, even an online store. So Richard, if people take just one thing away from your presentation today before we say goodbye till next week, what should it be?
I would be very concerned about anything you hear from the government, and I would investigate and do your own research on virtually every topic of concern to Americans, including not just 9/11 and COVID and Gaza, but currently the Iran war, which we're hearing, fortunately, a little bit more about from all different sides, depending on who you go to for your information. Regarding 9/11, though, as Lisa mentioned, be sure to get more educated. Watch the full presentations on technical information, the proof of controlled demolition of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. Let's get into it. There is a concept. It's a psychological tactic. And it is called rally around the flag. No place was this more evident than in the aftermath of 9/11 in America. I mean, the Dixie Chicks found out the hard way that you can't be critical of the American empire while the American empire is in the process of destroying some other country. Because if you do that, then that comes across as unpatriotic. And we can't have you being unpatriotic. We have to have you emotionally invested in this war or whatever it is. So I want to talk about this. I want to talk about the psychological component of how you talk people into war, which is happening right now. It's in the key characteristics of what that looks like. And we saw it. We saw it somewhere else. We saw it in 2020. But it wasn't an actual war on the battlefield. It was more of a medical war. We'll get into that. I want to talk about the impending false flag that's coming. It's coming. I don't know what day it's coming. I'm not sitting in those meetings, but I know it's coming. It's just a matter of time. And then finally, we'll wrap up with what this is all about, where we're headed, what the Iran-Persian Gulf situation is leading us to. Spoiler alert, if you don't hang in here for the entire episode, it's not great. It involves energy lockdowns. It involves an energy crisis for sure, and energy lockdowns potentially. So we'll get into that. You know, I think it's important for people to remember. You feel very powerless in situations like this. You think, you know, there's nothing I can do. I don't want this war, you know. They're going to do whatever they want to do anyway, right? So, like, why does it even matter? Well, they need your consent. I mean, they don't need your consent legally. You're supposed to have Congress declare war and all this. We've been illegally bombing the shit out of countries for 30-plus years. And the idea of declaring war is some old-timey concept that is completely lost, right? But they do need your emotional consent because it makes it easier. If every single person back at home is against the war, it makes it tougher for them to keep the war going. So in order for them to do this, they have to manipulate you into thinking that the war is necessary, the war is good versus evil, and that you are on the side of good. Because if the war is optional and you're the bad guy, it's very tough to get people on your side. By the way, the war is optional and we are the bad guys, which is the reason why it's tough to get the support back home. Trump is worried that he doesn't have a ton of support of his MAGA base. Well, you should be concerned about that because you don't have a ton of support for your MAGA base because you promised them no war. And within 18 months, you started the biggest war you could possibly find. So yeah, there's going to be problems with that. The narrative is that the Americans are the good guys no matter what. Anybody who criticizes them or asks questions or says, hey, maybe the reason why the bad guy, air quotes, bad guys are being so bad is because the good guys have been being kind of bad to them for a long, long time, and they're rising up. So again, good guys, bad guys, I mean, it depends on perspective. You know, they're all bad guys. Ultimately, they're all bad guys. When you get to this level, oh, is the American government, oh, you're critical of the American empire. What are you, on the side of Tehran? No, I'm not on anybody's side. There is an option where you can say they're all in on it. And by the way, I think they're all in on it. I'm not entirely sure that this war is as organic as we're led to believe. There's a lot of Israeli redevelopment buildings that are getting hit by Iranian missiles, which is super suspicious to me. There's no room for disagreement. We'll tell you that the American empire is spreading freedom and democracy and peace, and we're always the good guys. So if you're going to have the rally around the flag or rally around the false flag narrative, you have to be in charge of the information, which is increasingly difficult with a mainstream media that nobody listens to. But the Israel firsters are the ones who are in charge of all of the major media. So you get into these information choke points for news and the distribution of the news. And I use that term news extremely loosely because I don't know that we're getting any sort of accurate information from any side. There's plenty of agendas going on here. And frankly, in the post-COVID era, I feel like Wimerica is almost unrecognizable, and it's going to get worse. Because when you have wars in the Middle East, the people back home in America, the bombs might not be dropping on you, right? You're not in peril for your own safety. But things start to get different. The economy changes. Your behavior is modified. The narratives start really heavily through Hollywood for supporting these wars. There's going to be a ton of movies coming out talking about how Iran is the bad guy and America's the good guy. And we got to, you know, it's all Top Gun 2 and all that shit. But this is something that's been used for a long time. Rally around the flag, I'll give you the definition. The rally around the flag effect is a political science concept describing a short-term surge in public support for a country's government or leaders during international crisis or war. So this is when you have to set aside our differences and be patriotic. We're all, yeah, red team versus blue team. We normally fight with each other, but America's at war, and so we need to all come together. Why is America at war? Did the bad guys sneak in and attack America, and now we have to go get them, or did we start the war? Because it's really insulting to be whipped up into a frenzy about how, oh my God, we have to support this war, and if you're not properly enthusiastic enough, there's going to be big problems with the troop morale. Okay, well, first of all, there shouldn't be troops there, so I don't give a fuck about their morale. And if the troops have poor morale, that's on them. Maybe you shouldn't become a soldier. You should have poor morale. You've joined the American empire to fight on behalf of bankers and Israel. Your morale should be as low as possible right now. You should be asking, why did I sign up for this shit? How did I get talked into this? I should have done anything other than this. So you're not going to get much sympathy from me. But the rally around the flag concept, the political concept, was first defined in the early 1970s by political scientist John Muller. He pointed out some pretty key characteristics that you have to have for this right now. Not every conflict is going to qualify for one of these moments, right? So this is what he said you need in order to have one of these rally around the flag moments. Number one, it requires an event that is international in scope, right? So domestic issues aren't going to work here. Number two, it involves the president directly. And of course, since Trump has inserted himself into just about every aspect of geopolitics, it most definitely involves the president directly. Number three, it's got to be specific and dramatic. Well, the dramatization will be provided by the media and Hollywood. And as far as specific, well, it could be more specific, I think. Probably. Right now, it's a war against Iran. The reasoning for the war is very vague. Because say what you will about Afghanistan and Iraq in 2003 and 2005. Horrible, shouldn't have happened, of course. But there was no question about the reason why America was doing that. Now, the whole pretext of 9/11 was, we could get into that, it's a whole different story. But there was a 9/11 event. And then there were wars in the Middle East afterwards. And if you ever asked, why are there wars in the Middle East? They would point to 9/11. But with Iran, it's like, okay, so now there's a big war against Iran. Why? And they go, well, that because of, well, I don't know, seven countries in 5 years. They're mean to women. Isn't that it? They're always mean to women. Afghanistan or mean to everyone. We got to go. Is it because they're mean to women? Is that why we're getting into this war? Because that doesn't sound to me like it's a valid excuse. So it's got to be specific and it has to be dramatic. Then, as an example of this, so we look back on the Gulf War. George W. Bush's approval rating pre-9/11, mind you, he'd only been in office for 9 months. His approval rating was 51%. Didn't really have time for anyone to feel one way or the other about him. In the aftermath of 9/11, his approval rating was 90%. It increased by 39 percentage points. His father, George H.W. Bush, who I put as one of the top 10 worst people in the 20th century, his approval rating, he had the first Gulf War crisis in January of 91. His approval rating went from 59% to 89%. So he picked up 30 percentage points there. Jimmy Carter had a 26-point increase in his. FDR had a 12-point increase in his. So you do this, it usually lasts, the boost is temporary support, and it lasts a couple of months. It's like steroids for your presidential campaign. You get a lot of upside early on, and then the side effects kick in. And then next thing you know, you have to keep doing it all the time, or else you're going to be deflated, a deflated steroid guy, right? So same thing with the American empire. They're out here trying to push the rally around the flag concept, but that only works for a few months. And then after that, the euphoria dies down. You can only keep this intensity up for so long. And then people start to ask questions. People get bored. They move on. All right, now what? Now what are we doing? All right, are we still rallying around the flag? We're still in this war. Why isn't the war over? What are we doing there? Oh, shit. Now we have to see videos of troops coming back in body bags? I don't know if I'm in favor of this. Wait till the troops come back in body bags and the footage of them getting killed winds up on X with the drone footage of Iranians flying drones into U.S. Army barracks. And it's a freeze frame on the last thing a guy sees before his head blows off. So you don't want that. You can only do so much. We've got to rally support from all Americans for this optional war that we've walked into. I don't know. It's not a long-term fix. The long-term fix is stop participating in these wars, stop orchestrating these wars. But of course, that's not going to happen. Patriotism ultimately is the real reason for the bump. It's a sugar rush of patriotism, and it wears off really quickly. And in this, you have to paint the picture. When you're selling this concept to the general public, it is extremely important that you make yourself the victim, because you cannot be the aggressor here. It doesn't work like that in terms of the psychology of getting everybody to come to your defense. 9/11, a surprise attack. We didn't know it was coming. It came. It caught us off guard. You got everybody's attention. Now we're ready to go. You need that catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. But it's always important to be perceived as the victim. Nobody wants to support the bloodthirsty lunatic who's kicking off the war, but people will support the poor bastard who got punched in the face and didn't have it coming to him, right? Oh, you want to go find that guy? Let's all go find that guy and kick his ass. He shouldn't have sucker punched you like that. You'll get support for that. But if you're the guy and you're going around punching everybody in a bar, it's hard to say, hey, you know, come on, like, everybody have my back here. Why? You're the jerk in this situation, right? So you have to paint yourself as the victim. Of course, the American empire has learned a thing or two from the Israelis on that. I mean, holy shit, a culture of victimization. Their entire persona is their victims. It's important for everybody to perceive them as the victims. They're not the victims. They're the perpetrators. The mask is off with that. You can see glimpses of this recently, like Stand with Ukraine. Good example. I stand with Ukraine. Oh, you stand with the Azov Battalion? What's the Azov Battalion? Before you stand with Ukraine, you should maybe do a little bit of research into who you're standing with. Because the Azov Battalion were actual Nazis with swastika tattoos and all of that. The irony, of course, is the people who are standing with Ukraine calling everybody else Nazis, never looking at their own team. Because, you know, listen, don't let the facts get in the way of a perfectly good narrative. They're all Nazis coming to get us, really? Except that they're not. Everybody's a Nazi, except you. We're going to get more of this, unfortunately. The baby boomers are so susceptible to this. You know, they're just such flaggets. they love it. They love American flags. They love Ukrainian flags. They love Israeli flags. It's embarrassing, the state worship that goes on. If you are hugging your flag, you need to take a good, hard look at yourself, okay? And ask yourself, why are you doing this? Why have you identified with this team? Why is the flag the colors of your team? If you're an American, your team is actively plotting to murder millions of people in the Middle East. Is that the team you want to be on? I get it. You're an American because you were born in America. So am I. But if you wrap yourself in the American flag, then you deserve all the criticism that you get, that you have coming to you. Let's talk about the rally around the vaccine, because we just did this in 2020. It's the same mentality. COVID nonsense of 2020 was kind of a medical version of rally around the flag. It involved the president. It was specific and dramatic. It was international in scope. It ticks the boxes on this. Involves the president directly, is specific and dramatic. And it's also another invisible enemy that's right around the corner, going to get you, just like terrorism and climate change and carbon dioxide. It's invisible. You can't see it. It's definitely going to kill you. But you're going to have to listen to the experts who will tell you where it is, right? The terrorism is always there. Racism is always there. There's a supply-demand imbalance, so we have to go out and actually create the supply. We have to generate and fake the demand and do it that way. 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Remember that? 2 weeks to flatten the curve while you live your quarantine dream and get paid to watch Netflix. This was rally around the vaccine. That's what it was. It just was a medical version of it. And it didn't have the flag necessarily, but it had Pfizer logos. And you saw the people, you saw the cattle branding themselves, doing tattoos of their Band-Aids or tattoos of their vaccination records. Good luck with that. The unvaccinated aren't dying suddenly. That should be clear to anybody with the eyes to see it. But we've got 20 million dead from the vaccine and counting worldwide. Maybe that'll get somebody's attention. Maybe not. Maybe not. If you've taken a bunch of the vaccines, you're not going to listen to me anyway. You're ideologically down that path, and there's nothing I can say that will make you ever come to some conclusion that, oh, I fucked up and took these when I shouldn't have. You took an experimental rush-to-market gene therapy for a so-called virus with a 99.98% survivability rate and a median death age of 80 years old. You failed the litmus test. You flunked the test. But you can see some of the tactics that were used during that right now with the Iran war. Dogmatic response to anti-vaxxers who were opening up the herd. They were failing to comply. And then the herd goes, you're endangering us for your failure to comply. So you see how the mentality works. Trust the science, right? Trust the science delivered by a savior in a white lab coat, because they need that perceived authority to convince you to inject yourself with poisons. And they did a pretty good job. They got about 2/3 of the world to do it, to turn their rational brain off. You got intelligent people, smart people who couldn't see it until it was too late. We had social media censorship. We had videos removed. We had accounts banned. You know, when you get that, when you get the rally around the flag or the rally around the vaccine, you have to realize that while that is happening, you are in stage three of Yuri Bezmenov's four stages to demoralization. You are in stage three. That's the 6-week crisis. Remember, it's like you have to have the 20 years and then the 5 years and then a 6-week crisis. And then the normalization is step four. So once you're in that 6-week crisis, that's when you get the rally around the flag. That's when you get the rally around the vaccine. I mean, you have to wait for that. You have to be properly softened up for 25 years as well, because otherwise the crisis won't work if your head isn't prepped. It takes a while to do that. And the same tactics that they use to get you to open yourself up to the possibility of injecting yourself with an experimental poison is the same mentality, that the same tactic that they'll use to get you to be enthusiastically supporting a war with Iran. If you were to examine it rationally, logically, and reasonably, you would say, I don't want to do either of these things. But the point is, they need to get you in an irrational state of mind. They have to get you fearful. They have to get you terrified. They got everybody terrified of a virus with a 99.98% survivability rate. You're more likely to get hit by a car today crossing the street than die from COVID. Statistically speaking, it was a non-event. Statistically speaking, it was a non-event in terms of death, too. Here's a good did you know for COVID-loving friends out there. Did you know there were more deaths in 2019 than there were in 2020? backwards, right? There are more deaths in 2021 than there were in 2020. Do you know why? Vaccines. Sorry, it's not my numbers. You can get mad at me if you want. I'm just telling you what the numbers say. So you can't have a pandemic with millions of people dead, and yet the numbers are lower than the year before. What you have instead for 2020, they changed the statistics, they changed the names, they changed the way they accounted things. They removed flu, as you remember. There's 38 million cases of flu in 2019, and there were 1,800 cases of flu in 2020. Magically, flu disappeared. But out of nowhere, here came COVID. If you can't see that, if you can't make that connection, then you don't want to make the connection. There's something to that as well. If you recall, during the real rally around the vaccine timeframe, there was social policing done by neighborhood snitches. This was the too many people in your driveway on Thanksgiving, neighbor calling the police. I think they're having a super spreader event. Better send the authorities here to round up all these people. That's part of the mentality too. You deputize low IQ retards to then go out there and manage this, right? To go out there and be the enforcement, or the Karens of the world, to go out there and lecture you. So someone's going to come over to your house and lecture you. There's too many cars in your driveway. Meanwhile, they know nothing about virology. They understand nothing about vaccines. They've done zero research. But of course, they're going to be the most vocal ones that want to tell you how to live your life. I noticed something during COVID that was alarming to me. The elevation of nurses and doctors to godlike status. That is in order to put them above reproach, because you aren't going to question somebody who's a god, some doctor who comes in and tells you this is what you have and this is the only solution, is you have to inject yourself with this poison, right? You're only going to really listen to somebody like that if you believe they are an authority. So when Peter Hotez does his interviews from his home studio, that little elf, he always wore his white lab coat, even though he wasn't treating anybody at his home. He wore the white lab coat for the interviews because he wanted the perception of authority. It's a costume. When doctors put the white lab coats on, they are putting on a costume. That's all it is. And it's not accidental. The Rockefellers invented the medical industry, and they're very good at what they do. And so the idea that your doctor is wearing a white lab coat isn't some random occurrence. It is a psychological tactic that is used to put you beneath the doctor. They started doing it with the nurses during COVID. If you remember the big nurse statue that they built, this is how you do it. Put some people on a pedestal. If somebody is on a pedestal, you're going to be less likely to want to argue with them about, hey, I don't think this vaccine is safe. Who are you to question me? Who are you? If you recall, during the lockdown, depending on where you are in the world, Emmanuel Macron, Boris Johnson, Mark Rutte, and Donald Trump were all very, very popular when COVID kicked off. I know it's kind of hard to imagine that. It was 6 years ago. But when something potentially terrifying like that happens, everybody goes running to dad, for better or for worse. The idea that you would run to Emmanuel Macron to protect you from anything is fucking comical to me. Remember, these politicians take an early bump in their popularity because of the psychology of the herd, because how people respond in situations like this. And they're not getting a bump in their presidency numbers because they're doing such a great job. They get the bump because everybody kind of hopes that they're going to do a good job. They're not. There's nothing inspiring about Boris Johnson. He's not coming to save. Listen, if Boris Johnson is coming to save you, you're in real, real trouble. Let the record reflect that he is not in a position to save you, to fix your life. But people outsource that. They think that they are. They have an unhealthy relationship with their political leaders. They think they know them. That's a big problem. He would never do that. He would never say that. They're all in on it. I don't give a fuck. Period. They're all in on it, right? So don't allow yourself to fall into that delusion of thinking, yeah, but this guy's different. He's not different. He just hasn't done the thing to make you think that he's part of the club yet. But it's coming. There is something called the diversionary theory of war. This is part of the reason for why this war is happening right now, the war with Iran. And it's kind of similar to rally around the flag. A leader creates an international crisis in order to distract from domestic affairs and increase their approval rating. Bill Clinton right in the middle of Monica Lewinsky's situation, bomb a chemical building in Khartoum, Sudan, to distract from the Monica Lewinsky situation. But I wonder if the war was created to distract from the impending economic collapse. We know that wars are used to paper over a lot of mistakes. I mean, a war might start because an economic collapse is on the horizon, and it hasn't yet happened. But the people at the top can make that calculation, and they know. They have the information that the rest of us don't have, and they say, oh, shit, it is coming. Well, I'm not going to be blamed for the economic component of this. But maybe we can start a war. First of all, it'll distract. It'll allow us to print money, kick the can down the road. Nobody's going to criticize us about an economic collapse. And when the economic collapse happens, we'll just say it was because of the war. But we have to make sure that the war is a justifiable war, that we're in it for a real reason. And it can't be obvious that we're starting a war just to distract from Bill Clinton getting blowjobs. That happens. And I wonder if this war is to distract from the remaking of society that's coming, right? The economic collapse, stablecoin switcheroo. I mean, if you wanted to do that, we've been talking about that for a while. How do you take a collapsing banking system and move everybody into a new one? Well, you can't just say, we've got a new system, want to try it? Because that's not going to work. You have to destroy the current system, terrify everybody, and panic rush them into the new system. And what would do that? What would give you the justification to do that? Well, an economic collapse would, or a banking systemic failure would give you the pretense to say, yeah, according to that 2014 G20 document, the bank bail-in legislation, you know, where they legalized stealing all your money. Well, sorry that they stole all your money yesterday, but we told you it was going to happen. We have a solution, though. It's this new form of money. It's called stablecoins, and we'll make you whole on the back end, but we're just going to have to move you into another system to do that. There we go. That would do it. Don't know that the war is Iran bad. We have to end them. I think there's more to it than that. But the versionary theory of war applies to a lot of people. Look, hell, Netanyahu. Prime example. It's hard to criticize Netanyahu in Israel for his crimes, the impeachment, the arrest warrants from the ICC, and him being an internationally wanted war criminal. Oh, we can't focus on that. We're in the middle of a war. We'll have to process all of that in the aftermath of the war. Well, you know, a lot of things change during a war. Maybe that country's not even around anymore. Maybe the hierarchy that would prosecute somebody like a Netanyahu's all dead. Maybe Netanyahu's dead. I don't know. Netanyahu is dead, in my opinion. I think we've been watching AI videos of him for the last couple of months. You know when his plane went to Germany? You know when his plane left Israel and circled off the coast of Israel for 3 hours and then went to Germany and it never left? I think he died. I don't have any evidence of that. But I think that they would never allow the Iranians to know that they killed him. That's where they're starting to leak. He has some sort of cancer and this and that. He is a cancer. But I think that he's already dead and that they're going to craft some fake story. He hasn't come to the White House. I mean, if he never comes to the White House, then he's dead. If he dies before he comes to the White House, he was dead 2 months ago. And of course, whether you're talking about Israel or whether you're talking about the American Empire, a compliant corporate media is necessary to divert attention and run out the news cycle. When there's a little bit too much bad information, you're going to need the press to run cover for you from time to time. It's convenient if the press is also run by the CIA, because then you don't have to ask permission. So let's talk about the false flag, because it's coming. Because the situation in the Middle East is dire, and that can mean a couple things. Dire for the American empire also means that there's no appetite for war. And if there's no appetite for war, you have to create one. You're currently not hungry? Take a couple hits off this bong. We'll work on your appetite. We'll get the support where it needs to be. So the reality of the situation is that nobody is in support of this war against Iran except for the Jews in the Middle East. They're the ones that want this, and the ones, the Jews in the U.S., who are pushing for this. This does not benefit the American empire, doesn't benefit the American people in any way. Might benefit the American empire, but not the American people. And so they're going to need to get your support for this war somehow. The best way is to be the victim. That's it. Because it's hard to sell the war when you're the aggressive bad guys. You know, Israel is the aggressive bad guys, but you'll notice that their messaging is always the victim. It's the victim in everything. Somebody forgot to bring you your coffee, you're the victim, right? It's like another Holocaust, right? So if everything's the Holocaust and everybody's Adolf Hitler and everybody's a Nazi, then nobody's Adolf Hitler and nobody's a Nazi and the Holocaust is nothing. It's just one of those things. You done spent all your credibility and now nobody's listening to you. So the only people that want this war is one very select group of people. And they want this war because it destroys the people in their region who are actively trying to destroy Israel. Actually, shouldn't even say that Iran was actively trying to destroy Israel. Iran was not necessarily involved with Israel. Israel was the one that wanted to start it. So I don't know. The messaging coming out of the American empire is going to be confusing to most people because it's going to contradict what you're seeing with your own eyeballs. There is no actual support for this war. It is quite embarrassing. And I think that there's a calculation that's being made right now, too. Not only do the people not want the war, but the cast of characters that are running the war are not very impressive. Like Pete Hegseth, he's no Sun Tzu. Almost 2 years ago, he's working at Fox News part-time. Now he's the head of the military, he's the Secretary of War. He's a cartoon character who's being blackmailed by Israel. That's what he is. He's got all the crazy tattoos. He fancies himself a fucking Knight Templar. He's just a guy who used to work at Fox News. He's an embarrassment. He should be led away in handcuffs. The entire upper management of the Trump administration should be led away in handcuffs. They should go straight to the guillotines, as far as I'm concerned, for their crimes against humanity. But you know what the most insulting part of this whole thing for the American empire is that 35 years of investing Americans' blood and treasure into building out the Middle East, and it's all gone. It's all gone. American bases have been obliterated. Bahrain, Fifth Fleet, base there. It is smoldering rubble. It is not good. Qatar, obliterated the bases there. Saudi Arabia, bases have been hit. Kuwait, the bases were hit. Iraq, all the bases were taken out. Syria, the bases were taken out. And on top of all of this, there is a media blackout. They don't want you to know about that. Hotels in Dubai getting hit by missiles, and people were like, that's very random. Well, it wasn't, actually. What happened was that the American troops left the bases in UAE because they were under attack, and they were hiding out in hotels. And so those missiles that were hitting hotels, they weren't just randomly hitting the Radisson just to hit it. They were hitting it because the American guys were based there. Funny, that wasn't the lead story on the nightly news. I didn't hear anything about that on CNN. Wild. What about the realization that the petrodollar is dead? There's an attempt to keep it alive. There is some real wrangling going on here. There is a war happening, and then there is a resource war happening underneath that. And there are deals being signed, and it appears that the American empire is trying to salvage the petrodollar with these arrangements, but I don't know what it's going to look like anymore. I think the cat is out of the bag. They're accepting Chinese yuan for oil. They're accepting Bitcoin for toll booths, you know, at the toll. So that used to be the exclusive territory of the U.S. dollar, and now it's not. So maybe they can keep this thing going. Maybe the Nord Stream pipeline bombing is starting to make a lot more sense now. I'm thinking that the American empire is at war against Europe as well. When you're a lunatic like the American empire, you're at war with everybody. Nobody's your ally. Nobody's a real true friend. Can't trust anybody. So the idea that they're trying to cut Europe off from energy is reasonable. So there's a lot happening here. I guess it's a good thing that the Western Hemisphere is now the priority because the Middle East is essentially unusable. But what did I say? What did I say before this war started off? I'm not trying to call my own shots here on the war because I don't want war to happen. But I was saying that as soon as they took Venezuela, decapitated the leadership and started talking about the oil and signed that deal with Nigeria to make sure that the oil was coming there, and they stirred up a little trouble by murdering Christians there, and then they can run that through the media, and then you can get the justification to go in there and crack skulls and redo the oil contract paperwork. Once the American empire took care of those two fuel supply lines that did not go through the Middle East, you know, Venezuela just direct north, Nigeria just a straight shot west across the Atlantic, and you come right into Houston. So once those were shored up, I was like, oh man, that's what you would do right before a war. We get a war. And so if you know that the strait is going to be closed, And the Trump administration kind of threw their hands up like, I can't believe they closed the strait. Yeah, you can. Of course you can. Don't play that bullshit game with us. If I know it, you know it. But they lie. And I wonder just how much longer they can keep this going if they have American troops on the ground and drone footage comes back. The second that hits social media, it's all theoretical when it's Ukrainians. Yeah, it's Ukrainians. They look like you, but they're not you. Once it's Americans, I think the appetite inside America will evaporate almost overnight. There's very little support for it already. So I guess the question is this: what is the impending false flag designed to do? Is it designed to give the justification to get boots on the ground in Iran to accept that, for the American people to accept that? Depends on the false flag. It would have to happen on American soil for sure to get the American people to support that. But maybe that's not it. Maybe it's not boots on the ground in Iran. Maybe the real reason, the real aftermath of the false flag will be to create energy lockdowns. And in the aftermath of that, limit movement. I think we have been coming at this wrong. The war is the end goal. No, the war is like the reaction. My fear is the solution. Because if the goal is to create energy lockdowns, we're going to have real problems here. Because some things have been happening here. I mentioned that everybody's kind of renegotiating these deals and they're signing oil pipeline deals, that Genie Energy was deeply involved in this in Israel. It's part of the reason why they wanted Gaza. There's a pipeline that's supposed to run through there that in the future they want that. But something else happened that I think is worth mentioning. United Arab Emirates pulled out of OPEC Plus. And that is a huge deal because they were like the number three producer. I mean, a lot of people think UAE, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, they don't really know too much about, they produce a ton of oil and gas. I mean, I know you know that they produce some or a lot. I don't know if you know just how much, a staggering amount. And the problem has been when you join OPEC, which is a cartel, they set up the rules. And part of what the rules are is that you can't just produce as much gas as you want. They want you to produce a certain number of barrels. I think UAE was allowed to produce 2.5 million barrels a day, but their capacity was like 4.5 million. So what they're looking at every day, damn, we could be making so much more money if we were allowed to. It's not that we don't have the will or the ability to pull more oil and gas out and sell it. It's that we can't. We're legally bound by the terms of this OPEC structure that we just can't produce anymore. Now they've left. And with that, they're now no longer bound by OPEC rules. So they can produce as much as they want. Now, if they were to do that, if UAE were to crank everything up and start producing more, there might not be as big. It might offset some of the potential energy crisis. But UAE is on fire, okay? And they've been getting their oil fields hit by missiles. So they're not in a position to really, right now at least, to increase capacity. But in the future, they may be able to. They will at least have the legal ability to do that. So I wonder if the real goal is energy lockdowns. Agenda 2030, it's coming. It's coming. We're 3.5 years there. It's not too far away. What if this is the final push? You know, Agenda 2030, if you've examined the 17 sustainable development goals and everything, some of them are kind of pie in the sky. Like, it's probably not going to happen. But that is my calculation based on everything being normal. But what if things were not normal? What if we had energy lockdowns? You know, before the missiles were even really flying, so to speak, throughout the Middle East in a real way, the energy was shut down. The Strait of Hormuz was shut down, and that was an announcement. That announcement was made not by Iran. They didn't shut it down. It was made by the City of London. It was made by the insurance companies. They shut it down. They made the calculation that they were not going to be insuring those ships that were going through there. So they actually made the call on it early. Lloyd's of London refused to insure oil tankers coming in and out of the Persian Gulf. Lloyd's of London has been in business for 400 years. They have all the money in the world. They could afford to do it if they wanted to. Maybe it's a mathematical calculation. You don't do that during wartime, and fine. They jumped the gun. And in doing that, they shut it down. And my question is, did they shut it down on purpose? Shut it down early? Did they overreact on it? A case could be made that it was theoretically shut down anyway, because you have to be on a suicide mission to want to go through there. So maybe the insurance companies were just covering their asses on that. Yeah, maybe. I'd say maybe if it was just like your local insurance company doing the math on it, but not when it's Lloyd's of London, coming out of the city of London, a group that's been there for centuries. To me, it feels like a play on the global chessboard. Lloyd's of London will insure your asshole if you're like a famous porn star or something. You know what I mean? They insure weird body parts, and they insured Mary Hart's legs when she was on Entertainment Tonight and things like that. Like they'll do weird things like that. So they're not above being flexible when it comes to like, you want us to insure tankers going through? Well, tell us what do you got? I mean, we have to quadruple the price, but you know, we're open. No, they shut it down. They just said it's closed, right? Okay, well, at some point, you know, you have to start asking like, if there really is an energy lockdown, if that is the goal, if it's the problem reaction solution, the solution is energy lockdown, the reaction is this war, how bad could it get? Well, I'll tell you how bad it could get, because at some point, Saudi Aramco is sitting there with a $2 trillion market cap, the sixth most valuable company in the world, and it is within range of Iranian missiles. They can hit that thing anytime they want. They haven't, because they've been showing restraint and they understand the repercussions of what this will do. But the oil and gas syndicate has some decisions to make about who will be loyal now. We've got airspace, we've got oil, we've got defense bases. There's a lot going on in the Middle East that is not just about oil. It's about trade routes. It's about Belt and Road Initiative. It's about ports that are for the Belt and Road Initiative. As Alex Jones says, it's all happening. But in this case, it actually is all happening. It's the most confusing war I've watched in a while, because you are led to believe it's ideological, as many wars are, but it's not. And it also feels like it's being controlled by some external force. It's worth keeping our eyes open on this, you know, because when oil exports drop 30%, you should probably expect to start hearing about lockdowns. Some countries have already floated the idea, or maybe even implemented, four-day work weeks and things like that. Now you're talking about countries in like Southeast Asia. A lot of oil needs to get there. If it stops flowing in any way, it's going to be problematic in those regions first. Like they'll experience it first, but they'll talk about lockdowns if 30% of the oil is cut off. When 50% is gone, the world will force them. It won't be optional anymore. It won't be theoretical. It won't be, maybe we should have an energy lockdown and maybe we shouldn't. It will be a combination of what we saw in the late 70s with the oil embargo and odd and even license plates having certain days when they could go fill up and things like that. That's what it could look like. The reality is starting to set in that part of being the world's reserve currency, which the US dollar has been, is that if you're going to have that task, if you're going to be the big dog and have that, you have to provide security for the world's shipping lanes. It's just part of the deal. If you're going to be in charge of the money that they use for that, you also have to make sure that the routes are open. If you can't ensure that, then your US dollar isn't going to catch on. It's not going to work. So the American empire has been projecting strength around the world for a long time. That's what they call it, projecting strength. It's terrorism. It's threatening countries. It's moving your ships off the coast of some country and parking them there as a message that whatever they're doing, they should stop doing it because, you know, we're watching you. This is what ended the British empire in the late 50s after the catastrophe. The British Suez Canal War was lost in 1956. They lost the British Empire, you know, the maritime empire, right? The sun never sets on the British Empire. I mean, it changed. I wouldn't say it's gone. It's still there. It's retreated into the city, retreated into international offshore banking havens, things like that. It's opaque and financial driven and less like British battleships sailing across the world, imposing their policies on that. That I think the overt oppression is gone. But the covert manipulation through financial centers is still there. It's still there. It's still there with the insurance industry. It's driving part of this. But let me ask you this question. Remember the Deagle Report, 2015 to 2025? What if they were off by 3 years? Then what? Then did the numbers look different? I've spent a lot of time with the Deagle Report. I've got a new book I'm almost done with. It is going to blow your mind. I swear to you. You have to put it down a couple times and take a walk. But what if the Deagle Report is coming? It's just off by a little bit. Energy lockdowns would do it. Energy lockdowns would do it in a way that COVID couldn't. 70% of the Western population gone, heavily dependent on energy. Energy gets wiped out. It's a possibility. You miss the planting season. How are you going to kill 70%? I mean, how are 70% of the people going to go? It seemed like maybe with the vaccines, and that might be. You can't do it all with war. It's too hard. The easiest way to kill large percentages of people is through famine, unfortunately. And we may be looking at a global holodomor. Oil and gas, nitrogen, urea, fertilizers. None of those are getting out of the Persian Gulf, and that is a huge problem. You miss one planting season, now what? Just-in-time delivery. People are not prepared. People are not thinking ahead. You can't be wrong on this one. When they knock out the desalinization plants, the water treatment facilities, sewers, ports, airports, and turn it into a siege war, it's over. So those countries in the Middle East that get 90% of their water from desalinization plants, you have a gigantic Achilles heel, and they can turn that off on you whenever they want to. So the global famine that's coming, Michael Yon calls it a giga famine. To be fair, he's been talking about this. He's been projecting it for a few years now. And he's not wrong. I wish he were, but he's just not. He's seen what others couldn't see. He's seen it earlier. It feels like they are setting this up for a global famine. Africa, Southeast Asia, and the Middle East will be the most impacted. North America can figure this out. We're an energy exporter if we want to be. Won't be as impacted by that. Third world countries will be hammered. And I fear this. So if you want to understand where a global famine, if it's coming or not, or when it's coming, just watch the maritime choke points around the world. And if we get more issues in places like Bab el-Mandeb, the Strait of Malacca, out through Indonesia, obviously the Strait of Hormuz has been a problem. Panama Canal, if anything happens at the Panama Canal, it'll be intentional. I'd watch the Strait of Gibraltar as well. There's issues there. Well, there's potential issues everywhere. And it's worth keeping an eye on everything. The Danish Straits and the Baltic Sea, Bosphorus in Turkey. There are certain places, just geography, where if you ever get a big problem there, the problem doesn't remain in that region. It spreads everywhere. So when you're talking about food and fertilizer, you know, you could be dismissive about the Middle East and say, well, the oil and gas is one thing. Yeah, but they make massive chemical manufacturing facilities in the Middle East. The fertilizer that is made there, it's not cow shit anymore. It's petrochemical fertilizer, and it needs to be created in chemical processing facilities. And those facilities are on fire. There's a problem that is going to be everybody's problem here pretty soon. You can be agnostic about the war if you'd like, but when a global famine kicks off, it's going to impact everybody. So get your food situation sorted out now, not tomorrow, not next week. Do it today. Go load up on food yourself. Go to Costco. Do a run. Get it. Put it in your basement. Put it somewhere. You can't be wrong on this. You're better off being a year early than a minute late. For all the criticism we get for being paranoid, leverage it. Use it to your advantage, right? You're paranoid and you bought a bunch of food. Holy shit, that paranoid guy is going to be alive. Get your energy situation sorted out. Get your food sorted out. Then make sure to keep your mouth shut. Nobody else needs to know what you're working on. Macroaggressions.io is the website. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon.
Welcome back. We began with 911 truther architect Richard Gage appearing with Lisa Templeton on Informed Life Radio, and they were followed by Charlie Robinson from the Macroaggressions podcast. I'm guessing none of the information came as news to anyone listening tonight, but both talks serve as good reminders. Reminders that we, the people, don't matter to our would-be masters. So it'd be nice if we started mattering to each other. Keeping us divided and at each other's throats is our cacistocrats' superpower, and keeping us distracted is their focus. If we united and took a good look at them, because the fight is vertical, not horizontal, it'd all be over. They will do anything to keep that from happening, and I do mean anything. So expect the unexpected. Prepare for their version of anything. An alleged terrorist attack that makes the death toll on 911 seem insignificant. A financial collapse with bank closures, forcing everyone onto digital currency that can be turned off if we don't behave. yet another pandemic with Bill Gates' genetically modified mRNA-infused mosquitoes doing the vaccinating, an emergency fuel shortage and gas at $20 a gallon, or all of the above and then some. The rich don't want us breathing their air and drinking their water, and they don't want us eating their food either, which is why they're poisoning ours. My wish is for an uneventful summer, during which we can stock up on rice and beans and heirloom seeds and form communities, because no one is coming to save us, least of all Jesus. As the saying goes, God helps those who help themselves. And with that, I will thank you for hanging out with me tonight. Here's hoping you will come back next Saturday at 12 a.m. Sunday. In the meantime, I will play us out with The Coup and Patti Smith with Choir, Choir, Choir. May you find shelter from the coming storms and both courage and peace within. Sweet dreams.
With children of the beast that dodge the abortion. Neck plate firm between the floor and the portion. We'll shut your shit down, don't call it extortion. Caution, we're coming for your head. So call the feds and get files to shred. Every textbook read said bring you the bread. But guess what, we got you instead.
dreaming well of an aspect bright and fair. And my sleeping, it was broken, but my dream.
People have-